Then in the next text, 16, Krishna says, the Supreme Truth exists outside and inside of all living beings, the moving and the non-moving. Because he is subtle, he is beyond the power of material senses to see or know. Although far, far away, he is also near to all. And then in 17, although the Supersoul appears to be divided among all beings, he is never divided. He is situated as one. Although he is the maintainer of every living entity, it is to be understood that he devours and develops all. So then Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport, the Lord is situated in everyone's heart as the Supersoul. Does this mean that he has become divided? No, actually he is one. The example is given of the sun. The sun at the meridian is situated in its place. But if one goes for 5,000 miles in all directions and asks, where is the sun? Everyone will say that it is shining on his head. In the Vedic literature, this example is given to show that although he is undivided, he is situated as if divided. Also, it is said in Vedic literature that one Vishnu is present everywhere by his omnipotence, just as the sun appears in many places to many persons. Another example that's given of this is example of many water pots. Like if you have many water pots, and then you can see the sun reflected in each of the different water pots. You know, if you look in each, it's like they have these little clay pots. You know, so if you filled up hundreds and thousands of these clay pots and spread them out in the sunlight, and then you looked in each one, you could see the sun reflected. Actually, the sun is one. It's in the sky. It simply appears to be divided. Of course, it's all very mysterious in one sense. To really understand these things, you know, they have to be understood through realized knowledge. But you know, these examples are given to kind of point us in the right direction. In text 18 of the Supersoul is further described. He is the source of light in all luminous objects. He is beyond the darkness of matter and is unmanifested. He is knowledge, he is the object of knowledge, and he is the goal of knowledge. He is situated in everyone's heart. So in his purport, Srila Prabhupada expands on some of those points. Not saying too much different than what we've heard up to this point. Then the next verse that we want to consider is 23 in this chapter. This is a very important verse for understanding the function of the Supersoul. Like Srila Prabhupada often quotes the first line of this verse when describing the function of the Supersoul. Upadrasta anumanta cha. Find that's often quoted, an often quoted verse to talk about the Supersoul. Upadrasta means overseer and anumanta means permitter. So in the translation, Srila Prabhupada says, he gives this translation of Krishna's words. Yet in this body there is another, a transcendental enjoyer who is the Lord, the supreme proprietor, who exists as the overseer and permitter, and who is known as the Supersoul. So this purport's very important. Stated here that the Supersoul, who is always with the individual soul, is the representation of the Supreme Lord. He is not an ordinary living entity. Because the monist philosophers take the knower and the body to be one, they think that there is no difference between the Supersoul and the individual soul. So that's a mistake that many of the yogis and the impersonalists make. You know, even if they practice their systems, they just think when they encounter this super soul, oh, that's me. So to clarify this, the Lord says that he is represented as the Paramatman, every body. He is different from the individual soul. He is para, transcendental. The individual soul enjoys the activities of a particular field, but the super soul is present not as finite enjoyer, nor as one taking part in bodily activities, but as the witness, overseer, permitter, and supreme enjoyer. His name is Paramatma, not Atma. He is transcendental. It is distinctly clear that the Atma and the Paramatma are different. The super soul, the Paramatma, has legs and hands everywhere, but the individual soul does not. And because the Paramatma is the Supreme Lord, he is present within to sanction the individual soul's desiring material enjoyment. Without the sanction of the Supreme Soul, the individual soul cannot do anything. The individual is bhukta, or the sustained, and the Lord is bhokta, or the maintainer. There are innumerable living entities, and he is staying in them as a friend. So, this is really interesting. None of us as individual souls is like the doer. You know, everything we can desire, and then Krishna as the super soul is looking at our desires, and then Krishna's in the hearts of all living entities looking at their desires, and then he's got to make all kinds of adjustments, you know, because you've got millions and millions of living entities, and every one of them, because they got their karma, and so it's kind of like yeah, they have these computers, very advanced computers, called like parallel processing, you know, computers. Because like an ordinary computer, it's just got one, processing unit, and everything that happens in the computer has got to go through that one thing. So it's kind of very limiting. You know, it's very limiting because you know everything's just got to go, all the information and data. You know, it's just got to go through that one thing. So to get around that, scientists invented what they call like these parallel processing computers, where they have processing units, central processing units or whatever, you know, like, and they're all working at the same time, you know, so they can do much faster calculations and things like that. So you can say like Krishna, he's kind of got the ultimate in this kind of distributed parallel processing capacity, you know, because he's got like, he's in every atom. See, the super soul, actually the super soul is present at many different levels. First, there's Mahavishnu, who is like the super soul of, you know, the entire cosmic manifestation. And then you've got Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, who is like the super soul of each universe. And then you've got the Chiradakshaya Vishnu, who is actually the Vishnu who enters into the hearts of all living entities, and not only into the hearts of all living entities, but into every atom. It's stated in the Brahma Samhita, Andantarasta Paramano Chayantarastam. You know, that super soul is present inside each universe and also inside each atom. Paramano means atom. So, see, Krishna's not only got to be able to control the activities of the living entities, but then there's all this stuff that happens to the living entities, you know, as a result of material nature. So then Krishna, he's actually inside each atom too. You know, so he's got to be controlling all of that, because as we learn from Bhagavad Gita, prakrite kriyamanani gune karmani sarvasaha ahankari tiyame binabhikrita ashtadad. We don't do anything. You know, everything is happening under superior control and arrangement. Like I said, like not a blade of grass, you say not even an atom moves, not even a molecule of air moves without, you know, Krishna permitting it. You were saying something, Antoine? Well, it may not be exactly the same thing as, you know, the material atoms that the material scientists talk about, but they're particles. There's actually a whole science in the Vedas. There's these philosophers in Vedic times that would talk about atoms. And if you get into their descriptions, you see they're a little bit different than you know, the kind of atoms that, you know, in the details, they're different from maybe what the material scientists consider to be atoms. But in the general concept, that there are small particles of matter, tiny particles of matter, which upon which everything else is built up, you know, it's similar. There's actually a chapter in the Bhagavatam called Calculation of Time, like according to the atom, just like today they have, you know, atomic clocks that work on, you know, the movements of atoms. In Vedic times, they also had a system for calculating very, very tiny, you know, millionths of seconds. You know, it's there in the Bhagavatam, you know, calculating, you know, like time, you know, according to the time it takes different kinds of molecules and atoms to combine together. It's kind of interesting. So the general concept is the same. And then, you know, the material scientists, you know, if you look at the details, I'm sure you can find differences. But the main point is that as super soul, Krishna's inside, you know, the atom. So all this stuff that's happening, every living entity, they've got their karma, and they're getting new karma all the time. And so then Krishna's got to recalculate it, you know? Like somebody may have been, you know, like may have supposed to have been. And just like if you become a devotee, right, then Krishna's got to recalculate everything. All right, you were supposed to, because of that McDonald's hamburger that you ate, you know, you were supposed to get, you know, killed as a cow, you know, many millions of times. And so then Krishna's got to recalculate it all instantaneously. And then he's got to make it all fit, you know, because, you know, like everything's happening in this world, but it all fits together, you know, it's constantly changing. So Krishna can do that as a super soul. Like, you know, maybe you were supposed to, I don't know, maybe a meteor was supposed to hit you on the head or something, you know, so then you chant Hare Krishna, then Krishna's got to make, got to move it, you know.
So what's the bee going to
do? Huh?
What is the bee
going to do? I didn't hear. What is your question?
Actually, I have a different question.
Okay.
Like when something is supposed to, it's too trippy.
So. It's too trippy? No, nothing's too trippy for me. No, come on. No, come on. So what is it? Well, you don't have to. I'm not going to force you to ask your question.
Is there a distinction between the super soul in the heart and the super soul inside the atom?
Well, like Krishna says here, it appears to be divided, but actually it's one. You know, I mean, it's all. I don't see why there's any difference, you know, from Shastra. Andantrasta Paramana Chayantrasta. Well, that's. Well, Krishna can appear in many different sizes. In the human being, it's said that he appears like about 8 inches high, right? Right, so, or a thumb, yeah, okay. Right, so Krishna can take on different sizes for different purposes. It's not, it seems to be within his capabilities. But he says he goes into the atom, Parama Anu. So the atom is considered to be the smallest thing. So Krishna can even go inside the atom. Mahato, what is it? Mahato Mahiyan Anayor Niyan. He's greater than the greatest, smaller than the smallest. You know, so. But he can take any appropriate size for his purpose. And if he wants to be the size of a thumb in the heart, then he can do that. If he wants to enter into the atom, then becomes smaller than the atom, then he can do that. If he wants to expand himself to the size of Mahavishnu, you know, from which all the universes are coming, then he can, you know, he can do that. You know, he's, I guess that's what it means to be omnipotent, you know, all powerful.
Like when you offer food through the super soul, like he has many hands that come and just
Well, from the purport that we read, seems like that would be a very good way of understanding it. You know, that's... See, a lot of times, in many cases, like, when you come up to the devotional level, you know, there's maybe not so much a distinction between Krishna, super soul, like that, when you're entering into the kind of like higher levels of understanding. But in that purport that we just read back, you know, in the beginning of this chapter, you know, I think it was in the text, maybe 14 or 15, I think it says where his hands are everywhere. I think it was text 14. Yeah, it was text 14, I think. And then, that's what he says in the purport. Srila Prabhupada says, the Supreme is different from the individual soul. The Supreme Lord can extend his hand without limit. The individual soul cannot. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that if anyone offers him a fruit, flower, or fruit, little water, he accepts it. If the Lord is a far distance away, how can he accept things? This is the omnipotence of the Lord. Even though he is situated in his own abode, far, far away from earth, he can extend his hand to accept what anyone offers. That is his potency. So, in this verse, this is discussed in terms of the super soul. You know, so that's...
Because you see, when you think of the, like from the Brahma Samhita, when the Lord accepts an offering, any part of his body can do anything.
Right.
But when you think of in terms of the super soul, you think that actually he expands himself into this little more unconditioned.
Well, but see, all the incarnations of the Lord in the material world, it said they come through the super soul. They, you know, if you study Chaitanya Charitamrita, it said that they all come through Chiradakashaya Vishnu. They come through like that. And you know, it's... Chiradakashaya Vishnu is the one that's on the milk ocean, right? So there's a section in Chaitanya Charitamrita that describes the incarnations of the Lord, and it says they come through Chiradakshaya Vishnu. Yeah, that might also include the Archavigrahas. Okay, let's see how many more verses I want to go over. Let's see, because we've got 10 minutes left, and I just want to make sure we go through these verses, and then maybe we can take some more questions. But in any case, this is the super soul as the overseer and the permitter, you know, that we can't do anything without the super soul. So, and continuing this purport, the fact is that every individual living entity is eternally part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and both of them are very intimately related as friends. But the living entity has the tendency to reject the sanction of the Supreme Lord and act independently in an attempt to dominate nature. And because he has this tendency, he is called the marginal energy of the Supreme Lord. The living entity can be situated either in the material energy or in the spiritual energy. As long as he is conditioned by the material energy, the Supreme Lord, as his friend, the Supersoul, stays with him just to get him to return to the spiritual energy. The Lord is always eager to take him back to the spiritual energy, but due to his minute independence, the individual entity is continually rejecting. That's pretty interesting. We're continually, at every moment, continually rejecting the association of spiritual light. This misuse of independence is the cause of his material strife in the conditioned nature. The Lord, therefore, is always giving instruction from within and from without. From without, he gives instruction as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, and from within, He tries to convince the living entity that his activities in the material field are not conducive to real happiness. Just give it up and turn your faith to me. Then you will be happy, he says. So Krishna's always doing that to us. He's just continually trying to convince us. Actually, there's one purport where Srila Prabhupada says that before we came to the material world, Krishna similarly tried to convince us not to come. And he said, all right, you want to go? Then try it. So Krishna's just saying that. And we're continually... It's very interesting if you get into these purports. You know, there's some very interesting depth psychology, you know, it's being explained there, that we're continually rejecting. You know, Krishna's there, he's continually telling us, trying to convince us. And that means it's not just like he's repeating it like a, you know, like an endless tape or something, you know, but he's actually, you know, trying in different ways, you know, to, all right, you really want to do that? Is that what you really want to do? Are you sure about that? Don't you remember what happened last time you did that, you fool? Why don't you, you know, I mean, he's giving new arguments all the time. You know, if we actually listen, you know, if we listen, you know, we can see, you know, he's always trying to convince us like that, from within and from without. You know, there's both things are going on. Thus, the intelligent person who places his faith in the Paramatma, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, begins to advance toward a blissful, eternal life of knowledge. Then at 25, some perceive the Supersoul within themselves through meditation, others through cultivation of knowledge, and still others through working without fruit of desires. So this is the different ways that the Supersoul can be perceived. The Lord, in his purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, the Lord informs Arjuna that the conditioned souls can be divided into two classes as far as man's search for self-realization is concerned. Those who are atheists, agnostics, and skeptics are beyond the sense of spiritual understanding. So people are very proud of that these days, being an agnostic, a skeptic, you know, and even an atheist, but they're beyond the sense of spiritual understanding. But there are others who are faithful in their understanding of spiritual life, and they are called introspective devotees, philosophers, and workers who have renounced fruitive results. Those who are always trying to establish the doctrine of monism, that's impersonalism, the Mayavadi philosophy, are also counted among the atheists and agnostics. In other words, only the devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are best situated in spiritual understanding because they understand that beyond this material nature are the spiritual world and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is expanded as the Paramatma, the Supersoul, and everyone, the all-pervading Godhead. So then he goes on to further explain that. Then go to text 28. One who sees the Supersoul accompanying the individual soul in all bodies, and who understands that neither the soul nor the Supersoul within the destructible body is ever destroyed, actually sees. So this is the vision of the devotees of the Lord. Text 29 we want to consider, and this is the last one in this chapter that we're going to consider. One who sees the Supersoul equally present everywhere in every living being does not degrade himself by his mind. Thus he approaches the transcendental destination. And then in the purport, the living entity, by accepting his material existence, has become situated differently than in his spiritual existence. But if one understands that the Supreme is situated in his Paramatma manifestation everywhere, that is, if one can see the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in living things, he does not degrade himself by a destructive mentality, and he therefore gradually advances to the spiritual world. The mind is generally addicted to sense-gratifying processes, but when the mind turns to the Supersoul, one becomes advanced in spiritual understanding. In other words, if we see that the Supersoul is present in all living beings, then we're not going to try to use them for our own sense gratification. And we'll understand everyone's part and parcel of Krishna, an eternal servant of Krishna. Krishna's there trying to guide them. Krishna's in my heart trying to guide me. And therefore we'll just try to in our relationships with others, we'll simply try to relate as Krishna wants us to relate to other spirit souls. Of course, this is where preaching really gives you a lot of realization, because that's what Krishna, that's the whole purpose of this material world, is to wake up the sleeping spirit souls to the knowledge of Krishna consciousness. So the super soul's there in the heart of every living entity trying to convince them, and then, you know, if we can become instrumental in helping, you know, Krishna convince these living entities to reawaken their original Krishna consciousness, then we're properly situated. We're not engaged in, you know, the sense gratifying activities of this material world. So Sri Vrindavan, you had something?
This thing that whatever desire we have, so this supersoul is arranged.
Yes. Supersoul is arranging for everyone, for the dogs, for the cats, for everyone. But for the human beings, Supersoul is given a special opportunity for us to take advantage of, you know, Bhagavad Gita, the process of devotional service, like that. Yes, Bhakti Chris?
Can the scientists see the atom?
No, not really, they can't.
So how can they deny the existence of the soul but accept the existence of the atom?
Well, that's a very good argument. Because they know it by its symptoms. That's what they, you know, they say, well, we can see the atom by its symptoms. You know, we know when we do this or that, you know, if we have these big atom smashers, and, you know, like, we can see on the screen, you know, certain kind of, you know, trails of things like that. So that must mean, you know, the atom is structured like this or that or the other. So this, it's a very good argument. That's a very good argument that scientists accept so many things they can't see. Actually, there's more evidence for the soul than there is for the atom. You know, I mean, we all know that. But that's actually a very good argument. But to convince people, you have to sometimes put it in language that they can understand and appreciate. But basically, that's a very good argument, because the soul is actually like a spiritual atom. Is what it is. You know, it's an atomic particle of spirit. Yes. So in any case, this super soul, just to summarize, it's in terms of our whole development here, it's a step up, you know, because now we're getting into the actual personal form of the Lord. You know, we've gone through so many things. You know, you see, you know, the non-existence of God, the demons, ghosts, spirits, the demigods, Brahman, the universal form, you know, seeing God in nature. Now we're getting up to the where we're dealing with the actual one of the actual forms, personal forms of the Lord, but it's not his permanent and complete form. And what happens is when people they tend to approach the super soul for mystic powers, you know, that's what these yogis do, and they get kind of bewildered by their mystic powers, and they don't develop a desire for pure devotional service. So ultimately, yeah, they should understand that Krishna is the master of all mystic powers, Yogeshvara, and the actual goal of yoga. Yeah?
How is it possible
that... It's mechanical in its first stages. You know, there's simply some mechanical effort to control the senses, but because how does it go? It goes yama, niyama, pranayama, and then asana, pranayama, and then atyahara, and then dharana. See, then when you get up to like dharana, then you're talking about, you know, like the mind and the intelligence, and you're getting close to the soul, you know, basically in the super soul. At that point. And Srila Prabhupada says, and the Acharyas say, for any of these processes, even in personal realization work, there's got to be the grace of the Lord somehow or other involved, you know, at some point. So it's not that simply by some mechanical process you can get a realization of the super soul or even merge into Brahman. For any of these processes to work, there actually has to be, you know, some tinge of devotion, but it's not pure devotion. And because the object of it is You could even say bhakti yoga is in one sense. You know, there's sadhana bhakti, which may appear to be mechanical, simply mechanical. But if one performs it correctly, then you go to higher stages, which are not mechanical. If one understands that I think as Patanjali did, that the ultimate goal of the yoga system is to come to an understanding of Vishnu, then you know that will carry through. And then as you go through the higher stages, then you're getting beyond simply, you know, the mechanical postures and things like that, and you're dealing with the mind and the intelligence and the consciousness, and finally coming to realize the super soul. But that will be not by, there has to be some tinge of devotion there, or else it won't work. It can't simply be a mechanical process. Okay. So that's all for this week. And next week we're going to get into different realizations of Krishna personally. God is the ultimate source and controller. God is the Father. And then finally, Bhagavan, God in his complete, total feature, personal feature. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Of God. You know, that God is the source of everything, the controller of everything. This is certainly an aspect of Krishna, part of his glories and his attributes, that he's the source of everything and the controller of everything. But that is not his ultimate feature, his ultimate all-attractive feature. And his ultimate all-attractive feature, the residents of Vrindavan don't understand him as the source and controller of everything. Supreme object of affection, you know, the most beloved son, the most beloved friend, you know, the most beloved master, the most beloved paramour or husband, desired husband, like that. And they don't think so much of Krishna in this feature as ultimate source and controller. Now, for many people who approach God simply philosophically, you know, just exercising their minds and intelligence about the nature of this world, they'll come to the conclusion that yes, you know, there must be some ultimate source and controller. And they may not go any further than that, because that's really as far as you can go with your intelligence. I mean, to really know Krishna, you know, bhaktya mam abhijananti, you have to engage in devotional service to actually get to know Krishna and his all-attractive personal feature. So you find there are many philosophers and theologians and religionists who will just go that far. Another way to look at this is that this is actually a step for many people, you know, who may start out, you know, because we live in a very materialistic and atheistic society. So actually to convince people that there is some ultimate source and controller is sort of like the first step for those people. Because then when they've accepted, yes, there's some ultimate source and controller, then they may be able to go further and begin to inquire who that source and controller actually is and get into, you know, the higher stages of devotional service. So these are some of the considerations here. And a lot of our, you know, scientific preaching is ultimately directed towards this goal, is simply to convince intelligent people, that there must be some source and controller behind this whole, cosmic display. And that's why we say, well, this is, as I mentioned here, it's achieved by reason and scripture. Some people will derive their knowledge from scriptures, different scriptures that may talk about, some controller, some source. Even a lot of the Vedic literature, the Upanishads and things like that, they're not so much, some of them are not so much directed towards the ultimate personal feature of the Absolute Personality of Godhead, but more to the idea that there's some kind of source and controller. Of course, as I said, this is not unimportant. It is an aspect of Krishna's personality. And without, if we're trying to approach Krishna from the conditioned platform, and we don't go through this stage of understanding, that Krishna is the source and controller of everything, then we may mistake Krishna, for an ordinary human being or a slightly more powerful version of a human being like ourselves, something like that. As Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, avachananti mam mudha manushim tanam ashritam parambhavam janantam mama bhuta maheshwaram. Krishna says, when I descend in my human-like form, people are foolish. They misunderstand. They don't understand me properly. They ridicule me. They think that I'm just an ordinary person. And why? Because they don't understand my higher nature, my supreme dominion over all. So Krishna says, saying in Bhagavad Gita, that understanding, that he's the controller, that he's the source of everything, this is actually very important, because otherwise the tendency will be to misunderstand Krishna. So that's why, say in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is which contains in its 10th canto descriptions of Krishna's rasa lila and pastimes with the gopis and cowherd boys and things like that, that's preceded by 9 cantos where Shukadeva Goswami, Srila Vyasadeva, they're explaining Krishna's nature as the source of everything. As a matter of fact, the Srimad Bhagavatam starts out with Janmad Yasya Yataha. Yes, Krishna is the source of everything. Everything is coming from him. Ishvara Parma Krishna, stated in the Brahma Samhita, Krishna is the supreme controller. So it goes through 9 cantos establishing how Krishna is the controller, the source of everything. Now I'm kind of separating this idea from God as Father. That's another kind of God realization, because we'll see that there are many people and different faiths, Christian, Islamic, so on and so forth. They have some conception of a God as Father, more personal than, say, God is just a source and controller. Sometimes modern scientific people who have some spiritual inclinations, they'll think, well, what is God? They'll think that God is just like some big transcendental computer in the sky, that's controlling and directing everything, or that might be the source of everything, but they don't have any real clear conception of the personal feature. So this idea of God the Father is more more of a personal thing, where God is kind of intervening. We'll talk more about that tomorrow, personally intervening. Whereas this idea of God as the source and controller, it may not have that personal aspect that God's going to answer every individual's prayers and take care of them personally. It might be more sort of a bureaucratic sort of God, that they have in mind. So, but in any case, it is something that's important to understand. It's extremely important to understand, but it's not the ultimate level of God realization, that's presented in Bhagavad Gita or the Vedic literature in general. The ultimate level of God realization is Yeah, Krishna and his two-armed, attractive personal form, who's simply being worshipped out of love and devotion, pure attraction, you know, without even these liberated devotees who are not coming from the conditioned platform. They're just spontaneously attracted to Krishna like that. But as I said, coming from the conditioned platform, we're not ready to be spontaneously attracted, you know, to Krishna in his personal form. We have to understand, you know, first of all, Krishna's nature as, you know, the source and controller. Yeah. Which ones?
Both the ultimate controller and both the father.
Well, you can have, they can have an aspect of that to them. It can have, you know, like some impersonal concept mixed with it. It can have an aspect of, you know, super soul, because that's how Krishna actually is, you know, like controlling. But, you know, I put this here as a separate category, because usually when people are thinking of this, they're thinking of, you know, the one sort of transcendental being, whereas the super soul is kind of like the localized aspect of God and every atom. And so that's in the heart of every living being. But that super soul is actually an expansion of Vishnu or Krishna. And it is through the super soul that Krishna is controlling everything. That's how he does it. But still, ultimately, it's Krishna who's the supreme controller, because he's the source of the super soul. So this idea of God as the supreme controller and source of everything, he'd be even, if you want to say that, then the controller and source of the super soul as well. So this is kind of like taking it like a step further than super soul, really. And we're looking at the personality of Godhead, who's the source of the super soul and the source of Brahman. And one of his features is that he is that source and he is the controller. Now, he may have his agencies by which he does it, but most people, when they're that we encounter, like I said, you'll encounter philosophers, you'll encounter other people who are thinking of, like, there's kind of one something out there that is the source and controller of everything. And according to their level of piety and level of understanding, they'll understand that controller and source in a personal way or a less impersonal way, or maybe they'll understand, you know, that he's operating, you know, through some agency like the super soul or not. But since this in practical preaching, you know, what I found is you do run into people who are kind of accepting just some idea that there is one person out there or something out there that is the controller and the source of everything. Now, that is an aspect of Krishna, but it's not the ultimate aspect. And as I said at the beginning of the course, this is this division is something, you know, that I've come up with on the basis of practical preaching and study of Bhagavad Gita. Like I said, this is the whole area of, you could say, scientific, you know, preaching. It's just to convince people of this. You know, so there's, you know, if we have time, maybe we can even go over some of that. But what I wanted to do is go over the verses of Bhagavad Gita that, you know, describe, you know, Krishna as, you know, the source and controller of everything, because this is definitely one of his features. And see, there are, in addition to the texts that are listed here, there are three other ones that I want to note. So I was explaining, one can get this kind of realization simply by logic and reason, or one can get it by study of different scriptures. And you know, the advantage of it is it gives a person some satisfaction that they actually know the truth about a reality. And it actually provides a step, you know, for further progress. But just this kind of knowledge, it falls short of, you know, pure devotional service. And I mean, the only thing that a person can do is, like, once they understand this, then they just have to be convinced to take the further step, you know, to find out who that source and controller, you know, really is, and render, you know, service, active service to that person, not just be thinking and, you know, speculating about, you know, the nature of the source and controller. So we'll start in chapter 7 with text 4. So Krishna he's actually the source of everything. I mean, these are some very famous verses. Bhumir apa nala vayu kamana buddha eva cha ahankara tiyam me bina prakrita ashtada. The translation, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, all together these eight constitute my separated material energies. So everything that we see around us and everything that we experience within our, you know, with our, you know, material mind and intelligence and false ego, this is all coming from Krishna. It's one of his energies. And this is one of the key concepts of God, that God is the source of all energies. And as purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, the science of God analyzes the constitutional position of God and his diverse energies. And then he quotes a Vedic verse which explains how Krishna actually is the source of everything, how he actually manifests his different energies. Krishna exists in the spiritual world in his original spiritual form, and when there's a need to create this material world, he expands first as the Mahavishnu. And then from the Mahavishnu, all the material universes come, and then he enters into each one of them as the Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And then from this Garbhadakshay Vishnu comes Brahma. And as stated here, you know, if you look at this verse, the second Vishnu expansion, well, it says the first one, Mahavishnu, creates the total material energy known as the Mahatattva. So this Mahatattva, it contains in subtle form all of the different senses, all of the different material elements, all of the different sense objects. It's like if you had a big computer that had all of these things there, you know, a big computer program, computer graphics program, or, you know, 3D, you know, animation program that you had on your little toolbox, you know, all these different things, eyes, ears, arms, legs, sights, sounds, you know, all of this stuff, then you can combine it together to make different kinds of living entities, give them different kinds of sensory experiences. So that's what Mahavishnu is doing. He's sort of giving the whole basic program. You know, he's sort of the one who designs all of this stuff that's going to be used to create the bodies and the senses and the sense experiences of the living entities in this world. So he kind of does that in a basic way. It's all kind of there, but it's not combined together. Then, says the second, Garbhadaksha Vishnu enters into all the universes to create diversities in each of them. In other words, each universe is going to be different. You know, it's not that they're all the same. They're different sizes. Like it says, from Garbhadaksha Vishnu, Brahma, you know, the chief demigod, takes birth. And our universe is considered to be a very small one because the Brahma only has four heads. In other universes, the Brahmas have many heads, many millions of heads, tens of millions of heads. So this is kind of like a real simple universe, you know, for the kind of easier to program. Yeah, you know, like that. You know, you don't have to have so many heads to program the activities in this universe. So each one of the universes is different. And then the third, the Chiradakshaya Vishnu, is diffused as the all-pervading supersoul in all the universes known as Paramatma. He's present even within the atoms. So this is the mechanism by which, you know, Krishna is establishing this control. And what Brahma does, so it's like Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, he kind of sets some parameters for each universe. You know, that it's going to be this level of complexity or that level of complexity. And then Brahma comes in, and then he's the one who's got to take all this stuff and put it together. He's like the engineer. You know, somebody's already created the computer. Somebody's already created the computer program. So what he has to do is, and somebody's already, you know, given some basic instructions about what to do, so he's just got to do it. You know, take all the arms and the legs and the eyes and the ears and put them together in different ways, and then take all the different sensory things and create them, and then create different spaces or planets, you know, for these living entities to interact, you know, with each other, you know, higher planets, lower planets, middle planets, and on each of them, you know, you put together the senses in different ways. You know, on the higher planets it's more like everything's made of mind, intelligence and ego, and on the middle planets it's different. So these demigods are actually very intelligent, but they're agents, ultimately they're agents of this one Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the ultimate source of all of these energies, and is kind of like the ultimate controller. Like, I was in Los Angeles. I know this girl who's coming to the temple there. She's like, she does animations for a big computer animation special effect company called Digital Domain in Los Angeles. And I went to visit their studio, and they just have just hundreds and hundreds of these people sitting in little cubicles with their computers, you know, making living entities, what they're doing. You know, they have these computer programs, and they, like a lot of movies that you see today, the people that you see in them, they're not actually real people. They're actually computer generated. They look just like real people, you know, but they're not. You know, so they do this stuff. But then there's a president of the company who's, you know, directing everybody. So Krishna's like that, and it's the president of the company that spent the money to get the building, buy the computers, hire all the workers, and tells them what to do. So it's sort of like that. Krishna is sort of in a position like that. So if you went to a place like that, you'd understand there has to be somebody who's organizing and controlling this, not all just happening by chance. But you might not know. I mean, you may logically deduce that, and somebody may tell you that, but to actually get to meet that person and see who that person is, you know, who's responsible, that's another question. So, and further in this purport, you know, Srila Prabhupada says, this material world is a temporary manifestation of one of the energies of the Lord. All the activities of the material world are directed by these three Vishnu expansions of Lord Krishna. Generally, one who does not know the science of God, Krishna, assumes that this material world is for the enjoyment of the living entities, and that the living entities are the Purushas, the causes, controllers, and enjoyers of the material energy. According to Bhagavad Gita, this atheistic conclusion is false. So this is one of the reasons, you know, that it's important to establish that this idea that there is a controller, you know, that there is a source, an owner to everything, because then that means we're not the independent enjoyers and controllers, which is the tendency in material life. You know, that's why this idea is important, because we just think, oh, we're here, it doesn't belong, this energy, it doesn't belong to anybody, it only belongs to whoever can put their hands on it and keep everybody else's hands off of it, you know, then it's yours. And you can control it, and therefore they have countries and companies and, you know, this and that, and everybody thinks it's mine, I and mine. And then they try to enjoy it. But if we understand that there's a source to all of these energies and that there's a controller, then we should conclude that, well, it's not possible to do that. You know, we shouldn't be doing that. We should understand, oh, there must be some purpose here. There must be some purpose other than our purpose, and we have to harmonize our will with that purpose. So that's why it's important to understand that there is like some kind of supreme cause, some kind of supreme controller, you know, that everything just isn't happening by chance and everything just isn't here by accident. It says, in the verse under discussion is stated that Krishna is the original cause of the material manifestation, and Srimad Bhagavatam also confirms this. The ingredients of the material manifestation are separated energies of the Lord. So the, you know, the purport goes on to explain these things more in detail, but that's, you know, like the basic point. Then going on to the next text, 7.5. Apareya itastranya prakriti vidime param jiva bhuta mahabaho ye yadam daryate jagat. Besides these, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mine which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior energy. So that means not only the material resources, but the living entities, the conscious entities who are exploiting or trying to exploit this material energy, they are also energies of Krishna. They also have their source in Krishna. So Krishna is not only the source of the matter, but he's also the source of the souls who are trying to exploit this matter. And because Krishna is saying it's his energy, that means it's also under his control, ultimately. And so in his purport, Srila Prabhupada states, here it is clearly mentioned that the living entities belong to the superior nature, energy of the Supreme Lord, just as the material energy is an energy of the Lord. Later in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the cosmic manifestation has no power to act unless it is moved by the superior energy, the living entity. Energies are always controlled by the energetic, and therefore the living entities are always controlled by the Lord. They have no independent existence. They are never equally powerful as unintelligent men think. So this is, of course, this is the key aspect here, are the living entities independent or not? This is what the whole thing really comes down to, ultimately. Because if we think we're independent, then we don't want to surrender to anyone. We don't want to surrender to, you know, like God and live our lives according to his direction. So there's an argument given in Srimad Bhagavatam against this idea that the living entities are independent, and that's stated in this verse: O Supreme Eternal, if the embodied living entities were eternal and all-pervading like you, then they would not be under your control. But if the living entities are accepted as minute energies of your lordship, then they are at once subject to your supreme control. Therefore, real liberation entails surrender by the living entities to your control, and that surrender will make them happy. In that constitutional position only can they be controllers. Therefore, men with limited knowledge who advocate the monistic theory that God and the living entities are equal in all respects are actually guided by a faulty and polluted opinion. And then Srila Prabhupada explains, the Supreme Lord Krishna is the only controller, and all living entities are controlled by him. So this is, actually in that verse in the Bhagavatam, it's saying if the living entities actually were independent, then they wouldn't be under control. But we experience, actually we're under control. We're under the control of time, if nothing else. And we're being forced by time, karma, to undergo experiences that we don't want to undergo. And so therefore we're not actually the supreme controllers. So then in the next text, 6, this is where Krishna really declares that he's the origin of all of these things. He says, all created beings have their source in these two natures. Of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, know for certain that I am both the origin and the dissolution. So here Krishna is saying directly that he's the source, he's the origin of all of these entities, spiritual or material. Actually, that was the title of the magazine that Sataputta and I put together to sort of explain these things. It's called Origins. Then the next text we want to look at is text 12 in this chapter. There are many other texts in Bhagavad Gita that make these points, but these are some of the main ones. Know that all states of being, be they goodness, passion, or ignorance, are manifested by my energy. So there, as explained in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, all material activities in the world are being conducted under the three modes of material nature. And Krishna, he is the controller of these modes of nature. So all of these states of being, we experience different states of being in this world. And we see that there are different, you could say, modalities. But Krishna is the source of all of those. Then, text 19 in chapter 7. A very famous verse. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavam mam prapadyante vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sadurlabha. After many births and deaths, he who is actually acknowledged surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. So this verse explains like a certain progression, that how by this process of jnana or knowledge one can come to understand that Krishna is the source of everything, the cause of all causes. And then one will actually surrender to Krishna. Of course, Srila Prabhupada often uses this verse to say that best to engage in devotional service right from the start. And then, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayat Yasya Vairagyam Gyanam Shriyata Hoitakam. If you just engage in devotional service, then automatically all this knowledge will come and renunciation. But if one wants to exercise one's intellect to gradually try to understand, yes, is there a controller, is there some cause, some ultimate cause, then it can take many, many births, you know, to fully understand that. But when one does understand that, you know, somehow or other, then he will surrender to Krishna. So in his purport there's some interesting statements that, you know, that sort of explain the psychology behind this. The living entity, while executing devotional service or transcendental rituals after many, many births, may actually become situated in transcendental pure knowledge of the Supreme Person, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal of spiritual realization. In the beginning of spiritual realization, while one is trying to give up one's attachment to materialism, there is some leaning towards impersonalism. But when one is further advanced, he can understand that there are activities in spiritual life and that these activities constitute devotional service. Later in this purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that on the basis of this verse from the Chandogya Upanishad, that in this body there are powers of speaking, of seeing, of hearing, of mental activities, etc. But these are not important if not related to the Supreme Lord. And because Vasudeva is all-pervading and everything is Vasudeva, the devotee surrenders in full knowledge. So when one comes to understand these things, then one can surrender. Then, see the next verse we want to consider is in chapter 9, text 7. And here again, Krishna is explaining how he's the source of the universe. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature. And at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. And then text 8, he says, the whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated at the end. And then in text 10, we go to text 10. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. So here, Krishna is establishing, yes, that there is some kind of controller to the universe, just like in these texts before, you know, text 7 and 8. There's an explanation of how the whole universe, the whole cosmic order, it's under Krishna, it's being manifested by him. Whereas, like these material scientists, you know, they want to say that, well, there's just a big bang, you know, it just happens, you know, by chance. And that kind of philosophy, it's a very demoniac philosophy. Krishna explains in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Asatyam Apratishtam Te, Jagat Ahuranishvaram. You know, they say, yes, there is no God in control. The universe is just happening, you know, by accident. There's no foundation. It's just going on and on and on like that. But Krishna says from that, there's a certain type of philosophy that comes. And that philosophy is, let me gratify my senses until death. But this realization that the universes are being created and destroyed again and again, you know, under Krishna's control, that should make one think that there's some purpose to the whole show. Yes, Vedavyas.
Throughout your passage, you seem to mention that point often. The existentialist people, existentialists?
Yeah.
They're coming up with these fearful situations that there is no controller. And what I found is that it gives them a license to do everything.
It gives them a license.
You know,
it gives them or doesn't give them?
It gives them. Them anyway,
yeah.
I can't remember my original point. I think what it means is it means that they can be, like you're saying, that this society can be violent. Or I guess they're not violent. Yeah, I guess so. Because they have a license to do everything. Then they can deny anything that makes sense based on that philosophy.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, this is the most dangerous thing I've ever heard.
Well, they do. They have that, and you know, it can kind of enter even into our own society too.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I asked one man. I said, "Do you?" He was praying his philosophy. I was aware of that philosophy. So I said, "If there's a nice, not old woman, and knew she had a purse and she had a lot of money, would you steal it?" He said, "Well, it depends. You know, it depends if there's somebody around that doesn't see me."
Yeah.
And if there's somebody, there's nobody around, of course, I just knock her along and just take your money and you're like, I can do so many things with it.
Yeah, well, actually, society kind of runs on this principle these days. You know, it's just like in America now, they have maybe 2 million people in jail. And one of the biggest industries in the country is building more prisons. Because it's just come to the point where, you know, the law is, if you can get away with it, then you do it. You know, and then of course, you know, if you, you know, they have the police and the prisons and everything to try to stop you, you know, so it just becomes a game of cops and robbers, you know, like basically like that. Or like Srila Prabhupada said, you know, like you go into any airport and they check everybody, you know, for see if they're carrying a gun or something like that. He says that means everybody's, you know, they think if you produce a society where everybody is under suspicion of being a criminal or a terrorist or something like that, then, you know, what kind of society is that? You know, they've... But I think it comes down to, like, they've... Because they don't understand that there's a higher controller and that they're not, you know, really practicing devotional service, then they just... Then it just becomes, the philosophy becomes, you know, might makes right, and the only thing that prevents people from doing something is the threat of punishment, and then they know they're not going to get punished all the time by the material authorities, so they go ahead. But if they understood, well, actually there's a supreme controller, and you're not going to escape, you know, from, you know, his laws. Because that's another aspect of this whole thing, that they're laws of karma, you know, and that means for everything that you do, there's going to be a reaction, you know. So that's another whole aspect of this. People don't want to think that, well, yeah, well, I'll whack the little old lady over the head and grab her purse, you know, if nobody, but somebody is watching. You know, there is some larger control, you know, system in the universe. So yeah, it's but we can see society has become very degraded because they don't understand like these points. And the main reason they don't understand is because, you know, the scientists are telling them, you know, you don't have to worry about these religions and God, you know, that's mythology. You know, if you really want to know, we'll tell you, you know, it's Big Bang, evolution, all that. Yeah.
Because, you know, that point, it's very important for the devotees to have a realization of the Supreme Controller, on a realization, not just the knowledge, but to realize in some ways. And I think there's two ways of realizing it. One is that we feel our karmic reactions coming back to us.
Right.
And by understanding that. And the other one is that devotional service to Krishna. Because if we don't realize that, sometimes, like in our society, even though we're preaching the highest knowledge, it doesn't hit the
right
spot. People do a most incredible sinful activities in the religion.
Well, that's right. Yashastravidam utsraja vartate kamakarata nasa sadhima vapnoti nasukam na param gatim. Krishna says, if you give up the injunctions of the Shastra, then you don't achieve perfection, you don't attain the supreme goal, you don't attain happiness. So I think there is, as you say, like a danger this, you know, philosophy can even enter into the, you know, a society of devotees. So then you think, well, I'll obey the rules if I feel like it, and if I don't feel like it, then I won't, and that's okay. And, you know, it becomes like, then the whole thing just deteriorates, and then you have to have another great soul like Srila Prabhupada or Bhaktivinoda Thakur or somebody. Just like at the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Vaishnavism had deteriorated to the extent that people just thought, oh, it's just sex religion. You know, all right, you know. It had degraded to that point. There were a few, you know, Babaji's and great saints and sages around, but the whole thing had sort of deteriorated, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur kind of single-handedly kind of built it up again, and then Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati and then Srila Prabhupada, by understanding, yes, you know, there are some rules and regulations, you know, that have to be followed. But anyways, I just want to go quickly over the rest of the verses here. So this, as I said, this text 10 is very famous, where Krishna is just saying, yes, this material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. And then in text, chapter 10, text 8, where Krishna is explaining, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matas sarvam pravartate iti matbhava janti mam buddhabhava samanvitaha. I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So this again shows like how this realization can be the stepping stone, the necessary stepping stone up to pure devotional service. Like Srila Prabhupada says in this purport, a learned scholar who has studied the Vedas perfectly and has information from authorities like Lord Chaitanya and who knows how to apply these teachings can understand that Krishna is the origin of everything in both the material and spiritual worlds. And because he knows this perfectly, he becomes firmly fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. He can never be deviated by any amount of nonsensical commentaries or by fools. So this is the point. Like, this knowledge that Krishna is the source and the controller is very, very important. Because it gives us the platform for firm faith in Krishna and dedicating ourselves, you know, heart and soul to his service. Then, well, at the end of the purport, you know, Srila Prabhupada is also saying he's called the most efficient cause of everything. You know, so that's, you know, Krishna as the cause of causes as well. So then text 39 in this chapter, chapter 10, text 39. 1039. Furthermore, O Arjuna, I am the generating seed of all existences. There is no being, moving or non-moving, that can exist without me. And the purport, everything has a cause, and that cause or seed of manifestation is Krishna. Without Krishna's energy, nothing can exist. Then 1137, chapter 1137. This is just some prayers in this universal form chapter where it's stated at the last sentence of this translation, you are the invincible source, the cause of all causes, transcendental to this material manifestation. So these are some of the verses in Bhagavad Gita where this where Krishna is described as, you know, the source and the controller. But as I said, if you're going to, well, you may or may not, but you know, particularly those who are involved in kind of like this scientific preaching and intellectual preaching, you meet many people who are just studying God as the source and the controller without going any higher than that. So Bhagavad Gita can help these people go beyond that. And it's also important to be able to give people, you know, some arguments, you know, just the atheistic people who don't accept that there's any controller or source to everything. You know, they need to be educated about this. And then devotees, as Vedavyasa was saying, we need to understand this too, because this is our platform for advancing to the higher stages of devotional service, although it's not the ultimate stage. Okay, so tomorrow we're beginning the class late, after most of you are in the previous class. Okay, so you'll be coming back from, whenever you get back from your parikrama, it should be between noon and 10 after 12, and we'll start the class at that time. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. So today we're going to consider God as Father. Just a word about how this course was put together. Sort of put together as a combination of like my study of Bhagavad Gita and, you know, practical experience in encountering different categories of worshippers in the course of, you know, preaching activities and, you know, study of, you know, different kinds of religious writings and things like that. So just a reminder about the purpose of this course, and you may want to contemplate this, because this will be one of the questions I'll be asking on the final exam. You know, what is the actual purpose or purposes of this course? And the primary purpose of the course, it's to allow a devotee to present Bhagavad Gita as not simply as a sectarian book of the Hindus, but as a genuine science of God realization. And of course, Krishna worship is ultimately prescribed. You know, we'll see Krishna at the end of Bhagavad Gita saying sarva dharma and parityaja mamekam sharanam vraja, just abandon all varieties of religion and surrender unto me. But that statement has to be taken in, you know, the context. If that's all there was in Bhagavad Gita, then, you know, somebody might say, well, that's a very sectarian book. This is just a sectarian book of the Hindus. Instead, what we find that Bhagavad Gita does is it explains practically every variety of religious manifestation and arranges it in a sequence, a hierarchy, some lower, some higher. And in that hierarchy, this worship of Krishna comes as the highest level of God realization. But everything else is explained, and it's and you can see what's there. There's everything from the non-existence of God, atheism, and then we moved on to people who worship demons, ghosts, and spirits as supreme. And then Krishna shows what's wrong with that. That's worship in the mode of ignorance. There's something wrong with it. In other words, Krishna puts all these things in context and perspective. He arranges them so that you can see what is higher, what is lower in this whole range of levels of God realization. And then there's the demigod worshippers. And then the impersonalists who worship Brahman as supreme. And then there's the universal form, which is another aspect of God, but it's not the complete. And then Krishna shows how he can be seen in nature, how God can be seen in nature. But then at the end of that chapter he says, well, what's the use of discussing this anymore? With a single fragment of my opulence I pervade the entire universe. So that's not the complete level of God realization either. Then there's the super soul who can be achieved by the mystic yoga process. But again, that's not the ultimate feature of the absolute. And then just the idea that there's God as some controller, there's some ultimate source and controller to the universe, that's definitely true. That's definitely part of Krishna's glories, but it's not his complete glory. It's not his complete opulence. And today we'll consider something else. This is the idea of God as Father. And as I said, this whole system that I laid out here, it's not that you find, well, like Krishna in Bhagavad Gita saying, I'm going to explain 11 levels of, 10 levels of God realization. So, although these are all there, as I said, this has been put together from what's there in Bhagavad Gita and what we can see out there in the world in terms of kinds of worship and kinds of concepts of God that people have.